20 Blue Minutes, der kleine Podcast vom Research Institut 20 Blue.
Hallo, mein Name ist Anja Mutschler von 20 Blue und ich hätte da mal eine Frage. Und zwar an Maxim. Maxim ist heute mein Gast in 20 Blue Minutes. Ich nehme ein Interview mit ihm auf im Rahmen des Features bei 20 Blue Hour über Putins Krieg. Maxim ist aus St. Petersburg ursprünglich, ist jetzt woanders, denn er musste fliehen. Und ich werde dieses Gespräch mit ihm auf Englisch führen, weil ich sehr wichtig finde, dass wir die Perspektive von Russen, die nicht einverstanden sind mit Putins Krieg, hören. Und ich freue mich sehr, Maxim, dass du dabei bist. Now I'm switching to English. Don't worry, because the whole interview will be in English. So this is Anya from 20 Blue. And I'm really happy and delighted that you, Maxim, take part in this interview, that you will tell us something from your perspective, being Russian, who had to flee a couple of weeks or days ago. And yeah, so this interview is dedicated to all Russians who are not on the side of Putin, who started a war that is absolutely unnecessary and harms many, many people. Also you, Maxim, right? So my first question to you is, how are you? How are you today?
Yeah, hello, Anya. Hello, everyone. First of all, thanks for having me in this podcast. I'm really happy to be here and share my thoughts, ideas, and how I actually feel this whole situation. Yeah, for now, I'm relatively okay. So as much okay as it could be, you know, in the current circumstances. Of course, I'm kind of devastated, overwhelmed, you know, some negative emotions, frustrated. Don't know, you know, what the future has for me, even what the near future has for me. Because, you know, now the planet horizon is like, couple of weeks, only probably a month. So that's why no ideas, no thoughts what's going to happen to people like me, actually fled from Russia, who escaped the country because of this whole situation.
You managed to flee, right, from Russia. Was it difficult for you? I mean, the first decision is I have to flee, right? This is an incredible situation, I only can imagine. And then you have to organize many things. Maybe you can tell us how you got to flee.
Yeah, actually, it was a hard decision, but it was taken overnight. Unfortunately, you know, in the current circumstances, with the blockage of, you know, of many social networks, and now many, many companies just stopped supporting their services in Russia. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't carry on working and, you know, performing and delivering my responsibilities as I am supposed to. That is why I actually had to flee to some country where the services at least work and where I was able to carry on do what I was supposed to do for my company. It was really a super hard decision, as you know, I had to leave my home, my friends, my family. But on the other hand, you know, when I just crossed the border, it was like a breath of fresh air. Because, you know, the last couple of weeks that I was in Russia was just really unbearable. And it was not only about this whole situation and about the fact that your country suddenly, overnight, you know, became an aggressor for the whole world. But it was also about some internal repressions. You know, me and my friends were all against this war and we tried to do everything that we were able to do. We tried to take part in some anti-war protests. We tried to spread the word. We tried to actually spread some information that we received from the Ukrainian friends. But then it all became illegal in Russia. And now, you know, even if you post something, for example, some information from your Ukrainian friends, were actually hiding in bomb shelters because, you know, Russia is bombing the Ukrainian citizens. You are really running the risk of up to 15 years in prison, which is kind of insane. And you know, probably you saw the interview of Vladimir Putin the other day, and he officially kind of called us, or all the people who are against the war, who called us insects. And, you know, he even said that the Russian nation should just purge from the people like us, which was absolutely insane to me, and which sounded mm-hmm. like an absolutely fascist statement of a person who just hates his own nation, his own people. So that is why, yeah, it was unbearably hard to spend the last weeks in there.
When did you realize that something cruel is happening? I mean, we have the moment of the war, but have there been weeks before mm-hmm. where you felt like something is changing?
Yeah, there was something in there. There was some, you know, alarming news coming from the Russian border, you know, that the Russian troops were approaching the Russia-Ukraine border and that they were flocking in there, that the amount of troops was kind of increasing day in, day out. And of course, this news was alarming and we expected something terrible to happen. But at the beginning, we were just calming ourselves down and we thought that it was probably just some kind of blackmailing, some kind of, you know, big political games. And we never mm-hmm. believed that the real war would happen. We thought that, you know, probably they're trading, you know, some benefits for Russia and they're, you know, discussing some stuff with NATO mm-hmm. And that, you know, it will all just disappear in a couple of weeks, so the troops would get back to their normal location. But unfortunately, you know, the real war broke out, and it was a true shock for all of us. So nobody really expected that. You know, I really like the phrase that one of the Russian political observers said. He said that, you know, only the insane people could imagine this war, because it totally doesn't make sense. There is no any real reason for this. And those insane people, they turn out to be right.
I mean, the whole world was thinking like this, I guess. Nobody had this category of war, because it's a big invasion. It threatens many millions of people. It turns around the global politics in a certain sense. Nobody knows where this will end, actually. So it's a big upside down moment for everyone. And it's interesting to hear that even living in Russia, and I mean, I'm pretty sure you were consuming also the official Russian news and also some other news, I guess. So you would have had a clearer picture than me on how this war was communicated before. So it's interesting to hear that even for you, it was surprising that it suddenly became a true war, right?
Yeah.
And I to us, it really sounds totally odd to blame a Jewish prime minister in Ukraine, Zelensky, mm-hmm. And his government being a Nazi. Would you help me to understand? Is this a pattern? Was this new for you as well? Kind of where come this argument from? For us, it was kind of what this makes total no sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe there is something we missed in the communication before. Can you explain it a bit better? Why this denazification is coming from?
Well, I guess it all stems back to the year 2014, when actually the crisis in Ukraine started. You know, that Maidan scene, the Crimea crisis in Donetsk and Lugansk regions. And starting from those times, the Russian propaganda started cultivating the myth that there are huge troops of Nazi people in the Ukraine.
Yeah, Azov or something, right?
Yeah, not exactly. They called them Banderovtsi. So those are the people who kind of follow the philosophy of the Ukrainian hero, I guess, Stepan Bandera, the Ukrainian national hero, but who was a nationalist in a way, yeah, but at the same time, he did lots of really good things for Ukraine. But starting from those times, Russia actually started to demonize and to create this, you know, extremely negative image of these people in the media. I really doubt that there are such radical people in Ukraine, right? Of course, there are people who may, you know, have some a bit radical nationalistic views, but I guess in each and every country we can, you know, have this.
Yeah,
people.
I heard one historian saying it's kind of a small fraction of people.
Yeah.
and it kind of blowed up to a mass of people, which is a typical fake news strategy. So you take one bit of true and make it very big and very mainstream. I guess this is what was happening.
Yeah, exactly. They just exaggerated the whole thing. And now what they justify this war with, they actually are saying that they want to, again, purge Ukraine and all the Ukrainian territories from these neo-Nazi people, which is kind of not true, because they're really fighting with the Ukrainian army and with the regular Ukrainian people. Probably there are such people, I actually don't know, because you know, I'm not in the Ukraine, but it's definitely not the reason for this invasion. It cannot be justified, you know, in any way. Yeah, the Russian people have been kind of brainwashed with this myth, and propaganda actively cultivated it. And now, you know, lots of families are split because of that, because especially the old generation who remembers, you know, the consequences and the aftermath of the World War II. They have this negative image of Nazis, and probably the Russian propaganda managed to create, you know, this puzzle, this image in their minds, to create this connection, this bond with those times, right? And even the older generations, they also kind of justify that. They say, okay, probably there are some neo-Nazis in the Ukraine, and that's why our army should go there, kill these people, and let the Ukrainian people be free. Live happily and, you know, live in a free state. And it's really kind of blowing my mind out. I cannot understand the logical connection between that, because how can you actually make the nation free by destroying their cities, by killing their citizens and chasing for some, you know, fake and mysterious thing that actually even probably doesn't exist in there. Right, so it totally doesn't make sense to me.
Do Russian media show images of the war and destruction? No, they show something else, or
They don't show, you know, the destruction of the Ukrainian cities that much. At least at the times when I was there, even for example, when they destroy some hospital or some maternity house, they say that it's the those kind of neo-Nazis who did that. They actually blame Ukraine for bombing their cities on their own, which is kind of insane. And they say that the Russian army doesn't do that, that the Russian army only targets those troops of fascists, right, who reside in Ukraine and actually don't allow the Ukrainian people leave as they want to, right? And I do understand that it's hard to really understand the logic here, because there is no logic like at all.
No.
But the Russian media says that it's the Ukrainians who actually bomb their own cities, you know, if something terrible happens. And they don't really show, you know, how the Ukrainian people suffer, how, you know, how many people are killed, how many kids are killed. They just don't highlight that. When you just hear and watch the briefings of the Russian Ministry of Defense, they only report how many, you know, targets of the Ukrainian troops, they managed to destroy. They say nothing of casualties, neither from the side of the Russian army nor from the Ukrainian population. It's all kind of mystery. And as I mentioned before, you cannot actually spread the stats from the Ukrainian side, because this way you also run a risk of imprisonment in Russia. That's why it's kind of total mess, total absence of any logic.
And there is no fast way back. This is what I'm afraid of, because it feels like a perfect second reality. You take a fact, you turn it around, make another fact of it, and then it becomes another true fact. So this is a building for me, actually, where some, I don't know how many Russians, I don't know if there's a majority now who lives under this second reality building, and then everything makes sense again. But for me, my biggest fear is that there is built something that is a lasting thing. So because it will not be easy to demilitarize in words and action, because then the whole building crashes. And that is such a big threat, I guess, for Putin's government, that they will do everything to keep it up, right?
Yeah.
I hope I'm exaggerating, but do you think about it?
Yeah, I can't but agree with that. Yeah, it can be this way, nothing to it here.
What makes this with you? I mean, you are a kind, open, democratic thinking Russian person. You have many friends who think the same way. Do you have a home? Do you still have a home? Where is your mind feeling safe right now?
Well, it's a super hard question for me because, you know, I really feel that I don't have home anymore. And I definitely don't want to get back to the country until, you know, it is executing this policy, right? Because I am ashamed in many ways, you know, in front of my Ukrainian friends. I feel this guilt. I feel this sense of remorse. On the one hand, we tried to do something, you know, to change the situation. We tried to at least convince our surroundings, our friends and families, that the Russia is going in their own direction, the Russian Federation is going in their own direction, that we should probably change something or at least reconsider some things. But probably we were not, you know, tough enough, or we're not, you know, persistent enough to do that.
You want to live, right? I mean, it's a threat for life to act right
now. But on the other hand, it was not safe in Russia to do that, right? It was definitely risky for, you know, for our freedom, for, you know, the security of our friends and families.
And this was it like years ago as well?
It didn't happen overnight, right? The situation, has been developing, and that starting from the year 2014, from the events that are connected with Crimea. And the situation was getting worse and worse year in, year out. You know, the Russian media, they were either restricted or closed. New and new laws appeared that actually put some limits on the freedom of speech and the freedom of, you know, expressing yourself, actually, your thoughts and your opinions. The climax of this whole situation, it happened in this year. Now, you know, in Russia, there are actually no free media, no alternative media. All there were just shut down and permanently closed. And that is why it's really difficult, to change the situation. Because, again, you have too many risks. You cannot, spread some alternative opinion. There is just one single opinion that is supposed to be correct. And even if you make a step left or right, you have, like, too many risks.
I think that the united answer now we're seeing from Europe and United States, so Western, you would say, comes 7 years to 8 years too late. So we should have been acting like this, united and strong in 2014 when Crimea was taken. Because what we hear and what our big discussion right now here is in media, how could we ignore this cruelty in the beginning? Because Putin's perspective, we read a lot about he hates weakness, blah, blah, blah. So this was meant to be weak. Our not united answer was many sanctions, but nothing like this we have now. And then we have the civil society within the last 7 to 8 years decreasing in its power in Russia. This is what I saw. We had some news the month before this invasion started that NGOs were closed down. We talked a lot about the Navalny case, where we saw a bit of the cruelty this government was using against people trying to keep up to fight for free democracy. But to be honest, I think we missed this point in 2014, because since then we had this spiral, and this is kind of the dead point now. And it's nearly an impossible, I guess. And this is why I'm assuming most of your friends have fled to act right now, because it's a threat for life and it's nearly impossible to do something, right?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right about that. Because being in Russia, you cannot literally help Ukraine in any way, neither in spreading some information about this whole situation, nor in any financial way. Because, you know, most all payment providers like Visa or MasterCard, they just don't work because they stopped their activities in Russia. You know, a lot of my friends, they just moved to some neighboring countries like Georgia, mm-hmm. Armenia, Kazakhstan, Turkey, and others. Mm-hmm. And actually, from there, you have at least some chances to help, you know, financially by donating your blood, for instance, by going to the Russian embassy to take part in this, you know, peaceful protests. So that's why there is at least a chance for you to do something. In Russia, you are completely armless, and it's really difficult for you to do at least something to change the situation.
I think this is the job we can do now here in our Western democracies to help fleeing Russians to be able to speak up, to be able to assemble, to be able to help from outside. I mean, I heard you saying on social media, I was not directly affected by it. We have some discussions here in Germany, but honestly, Germany is quite good at the moment to be open in comparison to other times. So I'm pretty hopeful that we will manage this in Europe, at least. Not sure if this goes for the whole world, because the farther you are from this situation geographically, the more you kind of think of Russia. And everything is involved. In Europe, I have the feeling that we are able to differentiate. And this is something I really hope we will see in the near future, that you can expect us to help you building this. It will be an exile, I guess, for a matter of time, right? To make you strong there. And yeah, I think you told us in the beginning, now we are approaching the end of this podcast. It was really interesting. And thank you very much. Do you kind of having plans to moving to more Western countries, or I don't know, can you tell us something about your plans?
As I said at the beginning, my planning horizon expands to probably a couple of weeks or 1 month maximum. So at the moment, I'm just trying to take a pause, just to calm myself a bit, right? Because I was really drained emotionally and physically because of this whole situation. What's going to happen next? I really don't know. So the only thing that I would like to say that I will continue fighting against this whole system, and I will try to do my best to contribute and probably even volunteer, you know, in restoring Ukraine, helping the Ukrainian people. Because I do feel that we are just, you know, two different nations, you know, with different mentalities, different views, but we're still very close to each other. I cannot really separate me from my Ukrainian friends. We have so much in common. And even in this, you know, current terrible circumstances, we don't feel aggressive towards each other. We're still friends. We still communicate on a daily basis. I support them. They support me. Mm-hmm. And I do hope that in the future, we will live in a peaceful world where our countries, I just said that we'll be friends, but, you know, I don't believe that it's possible probably in the upcoming decades. But anyway, I do hope that these connections between people, they will remain the same, that this situation, terrible situation won't affect that. As my personal plans, again, I don't know. So wherever I will be useful, wherever I will be able to contribute into restoring this world, into, you know, helping the Ukrainian people, you know, to bring their country back to life. I believe, yeah, it is a possible scenario for me personally.
Well, okay. Thank you all for listening to Maxim, who fled from St. Petersburg. He gave us a really impressive insight on how you feel right now and how difficult it is to fight for peace within Russia right now. I truly hope that this situation will relieve in not so much time. Be safe. And yeah, let's hope, right? This is everything we have right now. Hope.
Den kleinen Podcast 20 Blue Minutes findet ihr überall dort, wo es gute Podcasts gibt. Und natürlich bei uns auf 20.blue. Bis bald.